Viking believes that a journey on the rivers of the world can be an experience designed for the thinking person. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at raymondjames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Lakoff, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. There's something frustratingly lovable about Tom Jones, the titular hero of Henry Fielding's coming-of-age novel. He's innocent, naive, and far too handsome for his own good, something that often gets Tom into trouble over the course of this four-part miniseries.
Ah, there's a girl. Of course there is.
Well, there was. She's being married this very morning.
Let me guess. She was too good for you.
Oh.
Exactly so.
Oh, but she had all your heart.
She did.
What about the rest of you?
Like any 20-year-old, Tom makes his fair share of mistakes, but he wants to do the right thing.
Give me her letter.
I can't do that.
My reputation! My honor, my peace of mind, give me her letter.
The moment I give you Miss Weston's letter, I prove myself to be the opposite of a gentleman. Now you can no longer ever be sure that your own secret is safe with me.
Hmm. So there is a brain in that pretty little head after all. Who would have thought it?
As Tom fumbles through adolescence and navigates the seedy underbelly of 18th century London, he somehow maintains his purity and matures through these experiences into adulthood. Actor Solly McLeod joins us to discuss Tom's universal transition from adolescence to adulthood, the wholesome and supportive chemistry between him and co-star Sophie Wilde, and the therapeutic qualities of playing Tom Jones. And this week we are joined by Tom Jones star Solly McLeod. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
So before we dive into Tom Jones, I'm curious. You're coming off of roles in Skies the Rising, the Game of Thrones prequel House of the Dragon, Outlander, and now Tom Jones. From the outside, it looks like your career has had an incredibly meteoric rise. Does it feel like overnight success to you, or is that just how it might appear?
I'm taking everything one day at a time, just so it doesn't overwhelm me in any way. But it has been an insane couple of years. Yeah, it's been great. But I think reading into it too much, I would probably start to freak out a little bit.
Don't freak out.
Yeah, no, don't freak out. Fine.
I mean, you were working in the service industry before enrolling at the Unseen Acting School in London shortly before lockdown began in Britain. What compelled you to sign up for drama school?
I was at a point where I was working in cafes, serving coffees, and it wasn't terrible. It was just something I knew that I didn't want to be doing. Really, I knew what I wanted to be doing, and that was acting. I kind of intervened in a way that was joining up to a kind of a drama school and acting classes just to kind of better myself and keep that kind of passion for it alive. And I was really lucky that that led to being signed with my current agency. And since then, it all happened fairly quickly.
And growing up, who were the actors then that inspired you, who made you want to act professionally?
I think I was probably 8 years old when I kind of decided that acting was something I wanted to do. It was almost as soon as I found out that it was a thing you could do. I remember my granddad showing me the Star Wars films. I was like, there's no way this is real. This can't be real. What's going on? They're flying these aliens. And I was at an age then where they could explain to me, oh, this is how films are made, their scenes, actors and all that. And I was like, oh, you can do that. It's like a job. That's kind of cool. Yeah, I'm gonna crack on and do it. And since then, I didn't have anything else I wanted to do.
You made quite a splash on House of the Dragon as Sir Joffrey Mormont, the so-called Knight of Kisses. What was your experience like working on a Game of Thrones series with its level of secrecy and its level of scale?
Yeah, that was another kind of step up for me. Another, pinch myself moment. Really, because I was a big fan of the show. Game of Thrones before, and just getting the job. I remember getting the call from my agent saying, oh yeah, well done, you've done it, you've got it. And I kind of hung up. I was like, yeah, fantastic, really cool. Put the phone down and had like 5 minutes of like heavy breathing just to make sure that I didn't explode. But it was crazy. And being on something of that scale, you know, even the seasoned actors that were on the show were coming onto these sets and just thinking and saying, oh my God, this is the biggest thing I've ever seen. It's just an absolute machine. It was lovely though. It still felt like there was kind of a sense of support and kind of community within the casts. It kind of helped everyone just do their best job, I think.
The character of Tom Jones might himself be called the Knight of Kisses. I mean, he's a romantic lead in a drama that follows his many desires. How much of Tom is in you? Do you have any of Tom Jones' swagger?
Yeah, I relate to him in terms of him trying to navigate his way through life as like a young man and the kind of mistakes that you make and things like that. And I was saying I didn't necessarily make the same mistakes that Tom did, but yeah, I definitely related to his innocence, especially kind of looking back at a younger version of myself. And I kind of felt that I could have definitely become like that if I'd had a different, you know, life experiences and stuff like that. So there was a definite relation to myself and him.
I mean, Tom Jones it's sumptuous, it's beautiful, but it is far more of an intimate period drama. It doesn't have the scale of House of the Dragon, let's say. Did it feel like a bit of a breather after the intensity of Westeros, or was it just as challenging?
No, it was definitely a breather. And I think that kind of lightness of the show and lightness of the character was the reason I was able to get through it after having worked for so many months beforehand already with very little rest. There was days that it was ridiculously cold and wet and rainy and everyone was tired, but just the kind of the character and the support from the other actors and just the vibe and the tone of the show itself kind of was the thing that got everyone through it, which is nice and refreshing to see that, because there's a lot of grimy things on TV and in films at the moment.
No, Gwyneth, when I spoke to her, said that she sort of compared it to sort of sunshine. Is it true when you got the audition for Tom Jones, you initially thought it was a project about the Welsh singer?
Yeah, it's incredibly true. I was so confused. I nearly wrote back to my agent saying, what? Do they really want me to do an audition to play Tom Jones, the singer? And I was thinking, I can't do the Welsh accent. I look like him. I definitely can't sing like him. But I quickly found out that it wasn't after reading a little bit further on. But yeah.
I mean, so instead of playing the What's New Pussycat singer, you're playing an 18th century libertine. Before signing on to this, were you a fan of British period dramas, or is this a new arena for you?
No, it's definitely a new arena. I had love for like kind of fantasy shows that were set obviously in period times, but there was a different element to them than these kind of British period dramas. But no, now after having been in one and taken part in the world, and it's something that I would happily kind of revisit at some point, potentially.
Over the course of these four episodes, we follow Tom from his discovery in Allworthy's bed as a foundling baby to maturity as he sort of fumbles his way to adulthood. What did you make of Tom's narrative arc over the course of the series?
I quite enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't have anything to compare it to because I didn't film before I started, and I tried to read the book. I went out and got a really nice copy of the book. I thought, yeah, I'm going to take it home, start this prep, really get into it. And I read 10 pages and I was like, this is so dense and detailed. I think the first 10 pages he was describing like a tree or the garden or something. And I was like, you know, there's other ways around this. I'll figure it out. So I didn't have anything to compare it to, but I quite liked almost the simplicity of it. It's an easier watch than most things that you see nowadays. The script seemed simple, but there was an opportunity to bring a lot more complexity to the character through my own experiences and stuff.
I mean, you talked about that you did see some of yourself in Tom, that you could have maybe made similar mistakes. I mean, although Tom's adventures are not necessarily the ones that we've had in the 21st century, there is a sort of universality to his journey, that through the missteps of adolescence, he finds himself and discovers his true identity in more ways than one. I mean, how much of that struggle then did you connect with on a personal level? That were you able to sort of bring your sort of own emotional truths to his journey.
Yeah, definitely. I was able to bring, you know, kind of recall on things that had happened in my past with the relationships with family or kind of first loves or those kind of what you think is kind of, you know, the most you're ever going to feel or that kind of thing, and realizing the kind of naivety in that. So it was interesting. It was kind of therapeutic going back and looking at why I am the way I am and how it could have been different in terms of the character.
So acting as therapy.
Yeah, acting is therapy and kind of healing. And I think that's kind of a big reason why I kind of enjoy it. And I like doing it. It's kind of healing for me as the actor and also for audiences as well. They kind of get to connect with something that they might not have experienced before.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors.
The Great Lakes, the Arctic and Antarctica, iconic destinations around the world. Viking offers opportunities for discovery with a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com.
Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. Tom and Sophia are thrust together early on in episode one, and he comes to her rescue, and her horse nearly throws her off.
Please, get out of the way!
Hey, hey, hey!
Oh, Lord, I can't! Hey. Oh, no!
Whoa!
Mr. Jones!
Miss Weston.
Will you let me up, sir?
Well, I should like to do so, but unfortunately, I think I may have broken my arm.
Tom!
It feels very much like a sort of meet cute from a romantic comedy. And these two are sort of instantly head over heels in love with each other. What does Tom see in Sophia, and how are his feelings instantly different to his feelings for Molly?
I don't know if he sees it instantly, but I think he feels some sort of connection that she has. I think it's because she is kind of an outcast in the same way. She doesn't quite fit into the world. And neither does Tom. He's trying to find that. So I think he relates to her in a different way than all the other characters do. And even in the show now, you kind of see these big kind of eccentric theatrical characters in the show. And Tom and Sophia seem like the only normal people, really.
Your scenes with her have such a beautiful innocence to them. There's no pretense between them. Their flirting isn't caddish at all, but it just sort of contains the purity of young love. What did Sophie bring to these scenes?
She brought everything to these scenes, honestly. I mean, it would have been completely different with anyone else, I would have said. I mean, you can never say it, but our kind of chemistry that we had as the characters, and even offset, was just a really kind of wholesome, supportive one. You know, we were the only two cast members that were there during the shoot for the full amount of time. So we spent pretty much every day together just kind of talking about whatever there was to talk about. You know, we're the only ones that knew what it was like to be on set every day and that kind of thing. So it was the same thing, like me and Sophie navigating the world of shooting, and then Tom and Sophia navigating their world as well.
Some literary critics over the years have described Tom as an unheroic hero. Do you see him as being unheroic, or have our understanding of heroes and our own moralities, particularly as it relates to sex, changed over the time since Tom Jones was first published? Is he a heroic hero, or is he an unheroic hero?
It kind of entirely depends on your own experiences with that kind of thing. I think Tom, or our version of Tom anyway, his character is kind of the very definition of like an archetypal hero. But him being put into the real world in real world situations, it doesn't normally work how you would expect it to in different kind of heroic adventures. You know, things don't just fall into place. It's definitely a more real depiction of what trying to be a hero would be like in real life, which is interesting as well, I think, to see that he really struggles. He has that breakdown in the fourth episode everything he tries to do right, something else goes wrong. So his willpower was really tested in that. And that's kind of where the heroic moment happens. You know, he comes out the other side.
No, I think his struggles, his flaws sort of make him more likable and sympathetic and make you root for him to overcome all of those things that are thrown at him, of which there are many in these four episodes. He tries to do the right thing early on with Molly Seagrim after he learns that she's pregnant with what he believes to be his child. He's horrified that Allworthy would rather pay off the Seagrims than have him do the right thing and marry her. Is Molly his first love, as Tom suggests, or is he just in lust?
I think the way I approach Tom is every kind of interaction he has, he always tries to see the best in people, and I think he's always truthful. So I do think, in a way, he was being truthful when he said, "You were my first love." Because I think being in love is a very kind of subjective thing, and it's like you can have different relationships with different people and love them in different ways. So I think he's a truthful person, like, all in all.
The sex scenes in Tom Jones are really different to what we see not only in period dramas, but just dramas, period. There's a sort of joy and enthusiasm to these scenes between Tom and Molly or Tom and Mrs. Waters that never feels performative. Were you struck at all by the tone of these scenes, which feels so dissimilar to what we usually see on screen?
I thought it was quite nice to approach them in like a lighter way, kind of more comedic way. Because there are occasions, you know, in relationships when it's just funny. And there's like, you have experiences that are funnier than others or more serious than others. But the tone of the show sits quite perfectly with the tone of the sex scenes and stuff. It never felt too awkward to film because they weren't taken as seriously, which was nice as well. I suppose it's kind of the first time I've ever had to do any kind of on-screen intimacy stuff. So that was nice as well. And just the relationships between the cast, just myself and Lucy and Susanna and Hannah, it made it feel a lot more natural. And it was good fun, yeah.
I mean, how did those sort of early scenes then contrast with the scenes between Tom and Lady Bellaston, which feel charged with a different sort of power dynamic? Those scenes in particular do feel somewhat different, where Tom is sort of on the back foot versus sort of being an equal participant in those early scenes.
Yeah, that was definitely done intentionally as well. It was kind of each interaction he had with the women in the show was kind of supposed to, you know, change something in him or push him a step further to, you know, realizing what it is that he really wants. And then when he finally is kind of confronted with the much darker, although they're still funny and kind of light, the much darker kind of undertones of the scenes with Lady Bellaston, that's when he really has to make a decision, I think. So they kind of used this kind of devices to push him on the right path.
We learn in episode 4 that Tom isn't really a foundling. He's actually the true son of Bridget Allworthy and therefore Blifil's half-brother. The narrative pushes Tom to become a better man before revealing that he isn't who he believed all along.
Bridget will like it very much when you begin to call her mother, because that bit is true.
I didn't know what to do. I couldn't tell anyone. An unmarried lady. What would the world have said? Oh, Tom. You must be so angry with me. What?
Mother.
How does the knowledge of who Tom is transform him, and how does it transform his relationship with the Allworthies?
I think the things that happen to Tom before he knows, kind of, there's a part of him that is still maybe lost. But I think in time, even if he didn't find out who his mother was, he would have realized that he was always kind of worthy of being part of the family and being part of the world and deserving of love. But that definitely was a thing that, you know, for him set in stone that he actually had been where he belonged the entire time.
Tom and Blifil have been competing for the hand of Sophia Western, though Tom has had her heart all along, even if he makes quite a few mistakes along the way. It's clear that Blifil sort of despises Tom out of jealousy. He tries to destroy Black George as collateral damage. What are Tom's feelings for his adopted brother? How does he feel about Blifil, even at this point, after everything that Blifil has done?
You know, I still feel, I mean, even there's even that scene in the when Tom's in prison. and Blifil comes to kind of, you know, his face a little bit. And you see Tom turn around and say, "Oh, I'm really sorry for doing what I've done. And, you know, it must have been hard for you." And he's forgiving him at that point. I don't know, just for being there. I don't know if he even knows why. He's just obviously seen that his presence has upset this person that I think he actually cares about. And you kind of see a switch in Blifil at that point as well, which was, I thought, was really nice to see. And James, who plays Blifil, did it in such an amazing way. There's some scenes where you kind of feel sorry for him, whereas in the book and in the film, I'm not sure if he really gets that humanity. You don't really see that come through.
The masquerade ball in episode 3 is one of my favorite sequences in Tom Jones, as Tom meets Lady Bellaston, disguised as the Queen of the Fairies, before following her in the hopes of finding Sophia.
"Flirt with any more trollops and I shall tell Miss Weston."
"You know Miss Weston? Madam? Madam, please, wait, I must speak with you."
There's this real sense of magic and menace to these scenes. What was it like filming this sequence with Hannah Waddingham?
Yeah, that was a big night. And we did film the entire sequence in one night shoot.
Oh, wow.
So there was a lot of prep, a lot of, you know, it was kind of the most focused that anyone had to be. But everyone really pulled it off. And yeah, it's a fantastic sequence. I mean, it was like a weird dream being there. You know, we were all kind of exhausted and cold and doing these choreographed moves that we drilled into ourselves. But in the end, it all paid off. And I guess that's kind of like the whole team effort of it. And Hannah, again, just working with Hannah and everything, was every scene that we did was a treat. She was incredibly supportive and brought a lot of energy and kept it alive when other people couldn't.
Now, those scenes between the two of you are just so intense and amazing. I mean, Lady Bellaston seems almost maternal at first towards Tom, and then she becomes predatory. I mean, Tom, as we said earlier, is sort of in this unusual position here, and then afterwards seems almost awkward and embarrassed by what happened. How does he read this first encounter with her?
A lot of the time when we were filming, we kind of wanted to make sure that Tom never seemed like someone that was just, you know, having his cake and eating it, that kind of thing. It was always kind of out of him being in a emotional state or feeling like he'd lost everything. He wanted some sort of comfort. And again, there was that maternal thing. And I think that kind of possibly kind of echoes his lack of a mother figure when he was growing up.
I love the moment when Partridge tells Tom that Mrs. Waters is Jenny Jones, his mother, and that he's committed incest by sleeping with her. A revelation that comes when Tom is at his lowest, when he's in prison for attacking Fitzgerald. How does this rather strange revelation, later disproven, shake the foundations of his world?
Everything that he fixes, every problem that he fixes, another problem comes with it or underneath. And that kind of constant beating down of his will and his willpower leading up to that point is again just kind of showing his resilience. And that's the moment for him that he goes, none of this was worth it. I should have just stayed at home. And, you know, you kind of find out, well, there you go, the circle back. He should have just stayed at home and figured it out. But then you wouldn't have had the same revelations as he did if he hadn't. So... yeah, but that's a breaking point for him.
I mean, I love his line. He says, "Neither by birth nor conduct am I any kind of gentleman. I am nothing more than what the world sees, a worthless bastard," which is, we later learn, completely untrue. But in this moment, he sees himself in the way that everyone has been sort of viewing him for the entirety of his life. And it is this moment, as you say, of sort of complete vulnerability where he loses the sense of self that he's found for himself, and he instead sees himself through the world's eyes. And it is just a heartbreaking moment for him and for the audience, where he loses everything, even his name, his morality, everything is sort of taken from him. But at the same time, there's nowhere to go but up, I guess. This is sort of rock bottom.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It kind of, you know, there's stories of people that they were in the worst possible place in their lives before making something of themselves or they're having their success. And that's kind of another example of it.
I mean, that you contrast that scene to the scene where Tom, who now has sort of a name and a fortune, finally proposes to Sophia, who then refuses. And Tom says,
Sophia, look at me. I'm a man now, a grown man. I know what empty pleasure looks like, and I thank my lucky stars that I know what true happiness looks like. It looks like you.
Are we finally, after all of these adventures, seeing the true Tom Jones, a mature adult, realize his errors and his faults here and accept who he is and make it a pledge to sort of become the better version or best version of himself?
Yeah. Yeah, for definite. And I think him finally having that closure and that kind of understanding of he was right all along. He knew that he was a gentleman. He always thought that. He always tried to be, and he always was in the end. So him having that confirmation that he was doing the right thing or had the right idea about himself, yeah, it just helps him figure out. He's like, oh, this is really what I want. You know, I've made some really big mistakes, and it's taken all of this to realize that it is possible.
I mean, it has been a whirlwind couple of years for you. So I am wondering, what is next for you?
I don't know. I recently finished filming The Dead Don't Hurt. I'm really just looking forward to seeing where this kind of next stage of my career goes. And I'm just kind of happy to be doing, have done and be doing what I'm doing. So we'll see.
Solly McLeod, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next time on Masterpiece, we travel back to the Oxford of the 1970s for one last murder investigation with Endeavour Morse.
Morse.
Sir.
Aye, matey. Back in the land of the living, then?
Well, seemingly not. Who found him?
Staff. Clearing up this morning after last night's do.
The final season of Endeavour begins Sunday, June 18th on Masterpiece on PBS. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, produced by Jack Pombriant, and edited by Robin Bissette. Alishaba Etoup is our sound designer. The executive producer for Masterpiece is Suzanne Simpson. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust.